Well, hi again, everybody. You're getting ready for another gripping, gripping show on the Suspendables. I don't even know where to start with what's on the show today. How about this one? A guy pissed into another player's hockey helmet. I can hardly even say it. That's coming up. Great story about how a measured stick ended up causing a guy a game. Russ talks about that. What Jeff, his brother, did in a skills competition to Gino. Oh, the poor guy. The poor guy. The Moore Bartuzzi thing. Russ weighs in on that, and you'll like his opinion on that. Coaches ripping guys is hilarious. We got some stories that. And a John Brophy rehash. That and a lot more coming up on the Suspendables. Well, I always end up laughing, folks, at the start of the show. This is Jim Jerome with the Suspendables, and my host, Rusty Courtnell, is, you just lit up a cigar, Russ. You're ready to go for the next show. And so here's what's happened the last couple of weeks, because I had some complaints from people. And so they emailed me and said, great show, but it sounds like Russ is in a barrel or inside a washing machine, you know, where... And so, sure enough, Russ and I write to get the tech guy on. Everyone
from Australia, right? on a holiday. Yeah. Got him out of bed.
Well, no, but I'm talking a couple weeks ago when the sound was bad. I phoned the guy. I said, "This is unacceptable. We need to have better quality." So they've been working on it, and now we just figured out that Russ, for 2 or 3 weeks now, has had the microphone backwards.
Fuck me. What an idiot. Oh, my God.
Anyway. You don't...
Too funny. Forgot the blue dot was supposed to face me, not be away from me.
Anyway, you sound good now. You don't need to yell. Russ, this is what I've been doing.
I'm not yelling.
Okay, don't yell. What have you been doing all week? Ahead. What's going on?
So I went up to Vancouver on Thursday. And I helped support a great charity event. It's called the Great Kitchen Party in Canada. And it helps raise money for Olympic athletes in Canada. Mm-hmm. And they also support local music programs across Canada and the culinary. So it's a combination of food, music, and sport. And it's just a fun event. So I co-chaired Vancouver, and we did it at Rogers Arena, and it was fun.
Nice.
That was Friday night. So we raised a bunch of money and drank a bunch of wine, had fun, listened to some great music, ate some good food, and flew back today.
How tough can that be? You know, most people, when they raise money, they got to put their life aside. It's like, listen, drink wine, eat all you want, and we're going to raise a bunch of money.
It's a great concept. Everybody who comes just loves it. It's fun. Sure. There's 600-700 people. So it was a really well-attended event.
Cool. The great one was in town this week, so we all got to follow him around like little penguins.
Yeah.
And watch a couple of games. Of course, the Oil went 2-0. I'll tell you what I've been doing, Russ.
Okay.
So listen to this.
I didn't ask, but we're going to hear it anyways.
Okay, listen. This is one of our shows.
Okay. What?
Hang on. Just don't talk.
Anyway, Ted, have a good week, Russ. We'll be back each and every week with the Suspendables.
So,
okay.
So see, here's what I do. Listen, this is, you're going to have fun with this. So there's the,
he's in a game and
there's a show, right?
I hear it all the time.
Now watch. You can make it go faster.
From the fans, and that's fine.
And you make it go really fast. Or you can make it go really slow.
Okay.
Anyway, I digress.
You do not have a life, do you?
No, I didn't.
No.
So
you didn't. You don't.
I don't have a life. Yeah, no, I didn't. Don't. I got no life. My baseball playoffs are on. I see your daughter's boyfriend won today. Minnesota wins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I didn't see the game. I was flying and I was in the air. And yeah, I texted him after the game and said, hey, I didn't see it. I heard, you know, you won. Great, great win, whatever. And he said, in all phases, they were great. So that must mean that defense, offense, everybody was really good today. So I haven't seen it, but that's what he said.
And of course, that's a swing for the coach. They love hearing that.
The quarterback, because, you know, we were beating him up pretty good last week, and so was everybody else, his teammates and the media. So he needed that win to kind of win back some non-believers.
Your wife is the sound of reason. because we were burying the quarterback Cousins, and then I could hear in the background, she goes, "That's a good idea, Russ, hacking on your daughter's boyfriend's teammate." Yes. It was a restart. We did the restart.
Yeah, we restarted there.
We don't want to piss anyone off. So, you know, I gave you my bad luck story because I love the action betting, and I lost this game in the last 5 seconds, the Eskimo game.
Yeah, yeah.
I gave up 7 points.
Impossible to lose, but you found a way to lose.
Yeah, they got 6 seconds to go. They snap the ball, and they throw it back to the end zone and kneel and give up 2 points, so I lose that. So today, I love the baseball now, and so I bet Washington in the series, but I'm getting about 3-1.
Okay.
So I threw a couple hundred bucks there so I can get, it's about 2-1 actually. So I could, and that game just started again. They're tied 1-1. So today I bet the Cardinals.
Uh-huh.
Okay. In the game, and it's about even money.
Yeah.
And hell of a game. Hell of a game. Cards are, it's 1-0 Cardinals score early in the game, and it stays 1-0. To the top of the ninth inning. Okay.
Oh God.
And they got two out, Russ.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
one more out here. I
know what's going to happen. I haven't even seen the ticker.
Yeah. I bet the 200. I'm going, this is in the bank.
Yeah.
Or three doubles in a row and Atlanta goes up 3-1 with two out in the top of the ninth. Anyway, St. Louis loses.
Like I said last week, you couldn't win with tomorrow's newspaper.
You're right.
Today.
So, Rusty, I'm watching. There's all sorts of sports. This is a great time for sports because the football is on. The basketball is about to start. The playoffs are on in baseball. And, of course, hockey started. So I'm watching the golf. I'm a golf fan. Two guys tied at the end. So they're going into a playoff in Kevin Na and Patrick Cantlay.
No way. Patrick, my boy. I just met him up at Gosser, and I got to play a few holes with him and hang out a little bit and hang out with his team. And what a great guy. Spent a little time with him, and I'm so happy for him. That's great. He was up there getting his work and getting ready. So obviously it paid off.
Well, I don't know who's going to win. It's on right now as we speak.
Well, he's going to come second, right? Or first or second.
Playoff, that's right. So maybe in his if he wins, Russ, it'll be, I've got to thank Russ Courtnell.
Do you think
that'll happen? Russ says, I spent a week with Russ at his Gosser Ranch, and boy, am I glad I don't drink. Anyway, you know what I was thinking, Russ? We've got tons to talk about. You know, the game of golf particularly, and you play golf, and you've played professional sports, of course, is... The nerves in golf, or you know, the nerves in sports are never more apparent to me than when you watch golf.
Yeah.
You know, that the guy, you know, yanks the 4-footer, hits it in the water. The more pressure, the more, you know, difficult it is to pull through, you know. And I've been watching a few hockey games. You know, I went to the Oiler game last night. And in the beginning of the game, their goalie, Smith, clearly was like, super nervous. He went to handle the puck and gave it away twice in the first period that resulted in goals, you know?
Uh-oh.
And I'm watching pitchers in the playoffs in baseball, and nerves got to the guy today in the final inning. Nerves in golf, missing putts, goalies mishandling, pucks, or golfers missing putts. but, you know, guys missing foul shots when they really need it in sports. And I thought, I got to ask Rusty about nerves in sports, you know, because back in when I got old enough, like you in the late 70s to watch sports, there was no sports psychology. And how did you ever experience, Russ, like so nervous that you didn't even know what hit you?
No, I loved the pressure. I thrived on it when I was a kid. I just, the bigger the game, the more excited, more prepared I was. But when I couldn't, when I was in the 89 finals against Calgary and I was with Montreal, I couldn't sleep because I was so excited.
Right.
Because I thought we were going to win. And I wasn't nervous. I just couldn't stop thinking about, God, I'm right here on the doorstep. We did not win. But I wouldn't say I was nervous. I was just so excited thinking, you know, I'm this close, two wins away from a Stanley Cup, and we didn't win. But I never really got nervous. I mean, I love playing in front of a big audience. I really enjoyed it. I love the whole atmosphere, home, away. But I wouldn't say I got nervous. I got excited about the game, but not nervous.
I'm trying to think, like, I mean, the most nervous I ever got was I pissed myself. I was in a pool room. I was in a pool room.
Thank God you weren't in a pool.
Yeah. Thank God I wasn't in a pool. That's right. I pissed in pools all the time, Russ. I still do it. And I was getting lippy. We were watching two guys playing, sort of betting on the side, and I was getting lippy. And one guy was a little drunk, and he ran at me with a cue ball in his hand, like a pool ball.
Oh, shit.
I just remember pissing myself. But, you know, I'm talking about, like now they got these sports psychologists, and that's what I got written down here. I said, I got to ask Russ about this. What does he think of the sports psychology thing? It was never around when you played, Russ, I don't think.
It was. We had a guy in Toronto, tried to help our team. We were the lowly Leafs, remember, back in the mid-80s?
Sure.
And we had one, and more. It was more about motivational and the sports psychologist that we had was thoughts like, he gave me this book, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind and Psycho-Cybernetics. And it was just how you fed your brain with thoughts, you know, positive thoughts versus negative thoughts. Your subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between a truth and a lie. You know, when you have one of those dreams and you wake up and you think it happened, that's your subconscious. And so he was teaching us how to talk to ourselves. So how to relax, how to visualize, you know, visualization was a big deal. And I think that's mainly what sports psychologists, I'm guessing, that are doing today, is just helping people be better and how they feed their brain on, you know, information about themselves, not, you know, not talking poorly to yourself, not being hard on yourself, and how, when things don't go well, how to react and how to come back to the moment of greatness.
So you believe in it?
I totally believe in it.
Yeah. You know, I know a golfer on tour who's playing on the Canadian tour, and he almost had a nervous breakdown because he got so nervous. He was in the lead. This is a while ago. I knew this guy. And he literally sort of broke down. He missed like a 3-footer.
Oh boy.
And then he couldn't putt. He couldn't hit a shot.
Yeah.
And ultimately left the game, that was the last we ever heard of the guy, you know? What some of these golfers are doing now, Russ, is they're taking an anxiety pill before they play. And I want to say like Ambien or something like that.
Ambien puts you to sleep. Can't be
something like that, that calms Ambien. Your nerves.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I can't imagine an Ambien.
Ambien's the one that knocks
sleeping on the first tee box.
Yeah, that's the one everyone gave me to get me to shut up and fall down. Was that the one? I should have looked this up ahead of time, but I don't know what it is. But there is a drug, a prescription drug that guys can take. And what are your thoughts on that, Russ, if that can handle anxiety or nerves, that someone's jacks a pill?
Well, if it's legal, I guess it's okay. We used to get fired up for games. We used to take, we'd have coffee and Sudafeds. They were legal I don't know. Like, as long as it's legal, I guess it's okay and it doesn't become a problem. But, you know, I try to stay away from all that crap, but, you know, I don't know.
I tried to.
No, but you know what? You didn't try that hard, though.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. You thought it was an Olympic sport. You got a gold medal.
What? My favorite expression back, I call it my blurry days, Russ. My favorite expression was, sure, I'll try that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so some of them are doing that. And I said, well, I got to ask Russ what he thinks. And,
yeah.
So a couple things, Russ. One of the hilarious things that happened in hockey amongst a bunch of stuff is there was a melee, you know, at on the ice.
Yeah.
Almost bench clear. And all the players were pushing and shoving. And then one of the guys grabs an opponent's stick that's lying on the ice.
Okay. Oh, I saw this.
And he gives it to a fan.
That was great. I love it. Mark. Yeah. Mark Andre Fleury, right?
I don't know who it was.
It was the goalie for Vegas. He picked up the stick and it was kind of like, I saw the video. Right. And I'm like, he's picking up the stick. And then he skates over to the corner. And you know where the there's holes in the glass for the photographers to stick their cameras through, right? So they can get the great shots with no glass. And he slid it through to a fan.
Yeah, that's the best ever.
And the announcer was like, he just gave away the other guy's stick. And then he goes, well, you know, they got a lot of sticks. Not a big deal. But I tell you, guys are a little superstitious when it comes to their sticks. You know, they got usually have cut four for every game. And there's a reason why they're playing without one, not the other three.
Yeah, but you must have. Yeah, but you must have loved it when you saw it. I said that's something Rusty would just. It's one of those things you wish you would have done it yourself.
That was brilliant.
Back in your day, any of that shit you can remember? We've talked about the great chirps that happened that were funny. And anyway, I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was just the funniest thing. I get a newfound respect for guys who think of that shit.
I told you that. Before I got to Montreal, Michel Goulet was playing for Quebec Nordiques.
Sure.
And he's a 50 goal scorer. He's outstanding.
Phenom.
Outstanding player. But Montreal and Quebec absolutely hated each other, as did Montreal and Boston. You know, rivalries were awesome. Mm-hmm. But right after warm up, apparently, his helmet came over and he had one of those Gretz. And
the Jofa.
So they sent the helmet over to get Montreal to fix it. There was something wrong with it. And one of the players, I don't know if I should say his name, but he said, give me that fucking helmet. And he pissed in it.
Oh, no, he didn't.
He pissed in the helmet.
Oh, no. Hang on. Make show notes here. You know how I do the details of the show, the bio show notes. Let's see. Yeah, guy pissed in guy's helmet.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, yeah. And then, we've talked about the Marty McSorley, the illegal stick in the playoffs.
Yes, sure.
Well, in between periods, they would bring the sticks of the visitors team and our team out of the hallway and into our locker room's hallway, and we would go back and look at guys' sticks during the game. And you know that they measured all the sticks and they knew it was illegal, and they eventually called a penalty, and they ended up came back and won the game.
So do you think that stick, so the rule, and you can only have a certain degree of curve, right? And there's a measuring thing that they use
Yeah.
And so, Marty got called against it. Did someone, do you think someone whipped a stick in there without him knowing?
Sure. No, for sure. So the sticks were on a trolley, both the Montreal Canadiens in the old form and the visiting team. And they're in the hallway, which led out to the bathrooms or whatever. So if you look in the old tapes of the old form, there was a hallway where the Montreal Canadiens walk into our dressing room. And the visiting team would skate across the ice to the other side. Well, they're not going to take all the spare sticks across the ice. Gotcha. So they wheeled them. They were on these trolleys, and they wheel them into this hallway, which was in our locker room. And we always looked at the sticks. We would go out and look at the sticks to see what guys were using for curves. And, you know, I would go there to look at other – when I was struggling, I'd want to look at other guys' curves to see if I could order that stick.
Right.
If it was the same company as me, but we'd also measure them to see which ones were legal or illegal.
Right.
So, you know that they measured all the sticks in the playoffs.
Yeah. There we go. And then just slid a little one in there that was illegal.
Well, they didn't slide it in there. It was Marty's.
Oh,
they measured his stick, you idiot. They knew it was illegal. Oh, fuck.
You went to
school just to eat your lunch. That's right. You went 4 years to university and you got 2 credits. Remember?
Where's the Ambien? Where's that Ambien? Yeah. I got it. that's hilarious. You know, I heard also, Russ, that opposing teams, we talked a few shows ago where they would spread like coins on the bench, right? So it would dull the guy's skates and shit.
Yeah, put nails in the floorboards so that guys would step on the nails and all kinds of shit. Yeah.
Someone told me that they turned the heat off in one in the opposing team's dressing room.
No, they wouldn't turn it off. They turned it up in the old Boston Garden. They would, in the playoffs, they would turn it up so high that guys were almost passing out before the game. It was awful. I think this is funny, but during my brother used to tease, he played a lot of practical jokes. So, you know, when they have the skills competition in Vancouver and in all the cities, they do the fastest skater, hardest shot, relays, all this stuff. Sure. So they got the hardest shot. So they let Gino Ojic go out. And my brother was relentless with Gino.
Right.
So right at the bottom of the shaft where there was always a little bit of tape there on the stick, and he cut his stick 3/4 of the way through the shaft. So every time Gino took – when he skates in as fast as he can to take a slapper, boom, breaks the stick, the puck doesn't move. So Gino looks at the stick, clean break, goes to the bench, gets another one. He cut all 4 sticks.
No, yeah. No.
And the puck never moved. Oh my God. And the fans are there, they're cheering on Gino, and he's skating in as fast as he can and can't even move the puck.
Gino Olczyk was the practical joking punching bag for everyone in that league. One of my favorites was yours at the fantasy camp, at Wayne Gretzky's fantasy camp. And we're all sitting around. You know, I loved going in that room where the pro players room was, because the shots, you know, that everyone was taking at each other. And Brett Hull shows up. Back in those days, he was beefy, you know. He had retired. And he was well overweight. And, of course, you guys get equipment when you get there, right? They set you up with pants and all that. And Hully comes in there, and no one wants to say anything, right? Yeah. And we're all sort of head down looking, and you're going to me, Jesus, you put a few on, eh? I guess, Jimmy, you know, like this. And Hully goes out to get a coffee or something, and you sew a triple X tag inside a medium pair of hockey pants.
Did not do that.
Yes,
no,
you did.
No, fuck that. I would never do that to Brett Hull.
Oh, fuck Rusty. You.
I did not. No way. Did I do that? Not a chance.
You went to the trainer. You said, here, sew this in there. Because Hully puts the pants on, right? He goes to put them on. He can hardly get his knee through them. And he's going, Jesus, what the fuck? And then he looks at the tag, and it says triple X. And he's going, holy fuck. I got to slow down.
I loved it. After he got his – well, that was funny. But when I don't remember. You sure it wasn't Jeff who did that?
I don't know.
After he got his skates on, he goes, oh, my God, I don't know if I can skate. I'm so exhausted. And I can laugh because, you know, I put on a fair bit of weight, too, after my career. I did not like the fat jokes because I was roly-poly there for quite a long time. So,
yeah, we think we're all tough and everything, handing out the barbs until someone shoots one at you and you go, hey, take it easy, pal. Okay, that's a little too much.
Yeah. Well, I told you guys that story when I went on that Legends tour, and who was the goalie? The guy for Brodeur from Vancouver, the King. Remember the night he was the goalie in the early '80s when they went to the finals against New York? Brodeur. What was his first
with the Kings?
Yeah. No. With the Canucks. Brodeur. Wasn't that Brodeur?
Oh, yeah.
French Canadian guy. Yeah. Anyways, he's pretty big. So when I was on the Legends tour, I always made sure he got in the shower first. I'd take my clothes off as fast as possible, go jump in there. I'd be showering right beside him because he made me look like I could still play.
I thought you were talking about Smitty. You know, Smitty, Steve Smith was the king. And I'm not talking about his game, folks. Okay. The guy was. If you saw him in the shower, you'd be like, holy Christ. It's renowned. It's renowned. And his buddy always said, he can use that thing as a selfie stick.
Oh, God. Jesus.
Anyway, One thing, Russ, that happened this week, I listened to our show because I've been repeating myself. People are giving me shit. But the guy, Evander Kane, shoved a ref. It was
costing some money.
Not right out of left field. You know, there was a scrum, and two guys were going to go at it, him and another guy. And they're sort of trying to hold him back. And this ref or linesman is running around like crazy. And a lot of people told me he should have just let them go. You know, they can handle each other. Anyway, he ends up shoving a ref and gets 3 games. Like, didn't go to push him down. You probably saw the vid. He sort of shoved him aside.
Yeah. And
he ends up getting this wicked penalty. But one of the sides that people are taking in this thing is they're blaming the ref in that thing, saying he was way too aggressive, you know, trying to hold them back.
Well, refs can get a little excited about the you know, getting in there, and it's sad when they do, because it doesn't usually go well. But I saw it briefly, and I didn't get why he got 3 games, but I haven't seen the whole thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it was over the too much, man.
Yeah,
too much. You know, it was sort of in the heat of the battle, but
It was like $120,000 or something it cost him.
And that. And do you agree with it?
Well, you're not. You know, you cannot physically touch the refs. And you know, after that guy, the player in Calgary, hit the guy from behind, and there's a lawsuit, that linesman suing him. Mm-hmm. And right. He got, what did he get, like 10 games, or I can't remember, but probably since then, and there's a pending lawsuit, the referees are probably much more protected since that incident. So that's probably where it's stemming from, is the league sending a message to the players, you can't touch the refs. But, you know, what I saw didn't seem, you know, I think he just tried to move him to the side, didn't he? Didn't he just try to push him out of the way?
Yeah. It was a pretty innocuous thing.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't knock him down.
Yeah, and he was looking beyond the ref, right? He's looking to fight somebody out. He's not like, he's not trying to fight the ref. He's trying to fight a player, and he's trying to move the guy out of his way. And so that was interesting. And then did you see Kapanen last night for the Maple Leafs? He blocks a shot.
Yep.
And he throws his broken stick at the other player's stick, who has the puck on the point, and they called a freaking penalty shot. And I'm watching the game with Roberto Aquilini, who owns the Canucks, his family, and I'm watching at his house with Kirk McLean. And I'm like, Mac, did you know that was a penalty? He goes, I'd never heard of that rule. Yeah, I knew it was a penalty, but I didn't realize it was a penalty shot. And the Montreal Canadian got the penalty shot, and he freaking scored. And then Montreal went on to win the game. So poor Kapanen is, you know, today in the media, he's, you know, apologizing. And he said he didn't know the rule. He didn't realize. And we as players know you can't touch the referees, but
Oh boy. That's bad luck there. Yeah. Well, that's how sometimes guys do find out the rule, is someone breaks the rule. And, because it was sort of intentional, right? Like, he didn't deny that it slipped out of his hand. Or
no, he threw it. He just didn't know the rule. Right. He did not know the rule. He at least that's his story, and he's sticking to it. Right.
Yeah. You know, you bring up an interesting thing, and then we'll talk about some other stuff. That, you know, Larry Kelly was one of the great agents, still is, I think. He must be getting towards retirement. A great NHL agent. Hasek was his guy, and Steve Yzerman was one of his clients. He's been around a long time. And he defended the kid who was the brunt of the kid in Colorado. It ended his career. Was it Bertuzzi who hit the kid?
Oh, yeah. More. He jumped more. Him. Yeah.
And that thing ended up being in a big loss. I don't even know if it's where it's at. It might still be ongoing. It's been that sort of complicated, that thing. But even Larry said some of this stuff where guys are, you know, charging guys with assault, unless it's really heinous, is even he's saying, you know, I think the NHL has got to police themselves, you know, and that you can't have this option to go outside of the game to the courts all the time. And what do you think about that?
I think it was chicken shit what the Moore did. I think he wouldn't respond to Bertuzzi, and Bertuzzi was, you know, big, tough.
Right.
And then he wasn't like a big fighter or anything. He was a hell of a hockey player, and he was challenging because what he did to Naslin.
The game before or something,
yeah,
right?
So all Moore had to do was turn around, grab on, and take his lickings, and then it would have all been done. But he ignored the invitation all the way from the hash marks up to center ice, and then Bertuzzi just had it and started hitting him. But what happened, in my opinion, is everybody piled on like it was a big dog pile, and I think that's where he got really hurt, was everybody jumping on. And I think the whole thing was chicken shit on his part, and then suing, it just to me was bullshit. I didn't like it, and I remember it clearly. And I think I watched the game too, and I was like, you got to turn around. Like, I wasn't a fighter, but if I did something to some other player like that, mm-hmm. you got to face the music. I mean, you know, if you're gonna play that way, and You gotta answer the bell, and he didn't, and then all hell broke loose and lawsuits, and I thought it was chicken shit.
Right.
There's not too many guys who play the game that would agree with what he did, both on the ice and off the ice. There's not. Right. He's got no fans. His family's cheering him on, and that's about it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Good. Interesting take. You remind me of when they had video replay and they give Mess a penalty, and clearly he snapped his stick in two across the guy's back. And the greatest line for Mess ever, Gretz was telling me last night, he goes, "That's a penalty? You can't break your stick over a guy's back? I didn't hit him in the face." You know,
well, I've told this story on the show before about me punching Mess in the face in pregame.
Tell us again. Yeah.
So we have a 5-on-4 – We have a power play, Toronto. This is how freaking cocky and tough the Oilers were. We've got the power play, and all four guys drop their gloves and start a freaking brawl. So Mark Messier's beating the shit out of Steve Thomas. So I jump in there and I hit Mark, cut him,
right.
And then Fierzy jumps on me. This is in preseason exhibition, November. Let's go. 20th is the first game we're going to play during the season against Edmonton. I've marked it on the calendar, and literally a week before I'm going, he's going to fucking kill me. He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me. So back to my point about Bertuzzi and Moore is that I knew I was going to have a fight with Mark Messier. He was going to kick the shit out of me. So we're at, and Mark and I had got to know each other in the off season at a couple charity events and hung out. We were mm-hmm. both single and you know, had our eyes on the prize every night when we were together to see who would win. And so we had a lot of laughs, but he wasn't a teammate. And so I go into Edmonton. I can't sleep the day of the game. Oh, maybe so back to your question, when was I nervous? This is when I was nervous.
There we go.
So anyways, I always played against Mark. So my line played against Mark's line. Right. Face right before the face off. I know exactly where it is. It's right in front of our bench, just outside the blue line. And I put my stick down, and he looks up at me and he goes, "Barry Tees after the game." And I went,
"There we go.
Yeah. Oh, no problem. See you there." And to this day,
which was a big bar.
But it doesn't matter. He didn't kick the shit out of me. And so either he didn't know it was me, or he gave me a pass, but we have never, ever spoken about it. I played with him on Team Canada. I played with him on the Rangers. I've played quite a few rounds of golf at Sherwood with him. We've hung out. I have never, ever brought it up because I was so thankful that he didn't beat the crap out of me.
You probably wake up in a cold sweat once in a while. God. Fuck, he's still going to get me somewhere, sometime.
You don't think I'd forget, did you?
I remember when you first told that story at some event we were at, you were telling him, going, "I was thinking about going into the coach, but I just didn't," and telling him I had the flu before the night of the game. Yeah.
Now you're making shit up.
Of course. Yeah. We don't let facts get in the way, like I told you. Our research department, Russ, has sussed out a bunch of questions that people have for you this week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and thanks a lot to Mark Mayhew. He's my guy. Russ, you're back in L.A. now. One of the toughest and most crowded sports markets anywhere. USC college football is almost as big as the NFL. L.A. Rams football is not. LeBron plays for the Lakers. You have the Clippers, Dodgers, the Angels. How do the L.A. Kings and Anaheim Ducks do within this crowded sports market?
I think they do quite well. They've both won Stanley Cups. I think it's not easy for them. They have to really stay on top of their fan base. They have to come up with new ideas where Toronto, Montreal, they've got a lineup and people waiting to buy tickets. I think in these markets, you really are forced to work a lot harder at keeping the fan happy, bringing new fans into the game. I think it's a full-time job. Luke Robitaille's done a great job here in LA and very innovative, open-minded and always thinking outside the box and has got a lot of credit for the success that the Kings have had here and their new building, but it's not easy. They got it. They always have to, I think that's why, in this market, they always go after the star player. They're always, look at the Lakers. Like they always got to have that marquee guy, and the Dodgers spend more money than any other team. And the Kings are always trying, they're in a rebuild right now, but if they weren't stuck with all these salaries, these contracts with these older players, they'd probably be a lot more aggressive than they are, but they're in a salary cap and they're working.
So I guess the question is for you, because the game is not, for years and years, the game just got lost in LA, right? It was like, I don't even know if this team's going to survive. There's so much else going on. And then, of course, the Gretzky trade is what changed all of that for Los Angeles. I'm guessing, Russ, is that right?
100% hockey. I had a buddy here who played in a men's league in LA. He said from LA to Anaheim, and that was before Anaheim was in the league, they had four men's hockey teams.
Yep.
And now the rinks are just jam packed. We've got some great NHL players that have come out of California. And before Wayne signed in LA, I think they were drawing like 5,000, 6,000 people a game. I mean, it wasn't great, but, he, single-handedly changed the hockey. I think the two biggest events in the United States for hockey were the gold medal team in 1980 and Wayne Gretzky. Those are the two greatest impacts on hockey in the United States.
Right.
And there was no teams in Florida. There was only one team in California. And look how the game's changed. And look at the draft. All you got to do is look at the draft now and look at it. It used to be dominated by Canadians, and now it's not. The U.S. is just producing so many great players, and California is, look, Arizona, Austin Matthews coming out of Arizona, one of the best players in the world.
Right.
So.
Right. But to your point, when you talk about, like those tougher markets, no matter what the sport is, you got multiple pro teams in L.A. New York's the same, right? And the Yankees, of course, have been signing superstars their whole life, to do it. So clearly, when you get the greatest guy in hockey, it was going to change that. If you had the choice, Russ, putting aside the emotional thing for a Canadian kid to get drafted by Toronto like you did, would you rather play for a team, like if you live in my town in Edmonton, it's the only game in town, okay? It's the only game in town, and it's great, it's on fire with the Oilers. Would you rather play in a market where the team goes unnoticed, like a Florida or LA, or would you rather play where it's the only game in town?
If you're a player, I love playing in markets where it was. I love it. I love being on cities like Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, those cities. It was like being a Broadway actor, in New York. I mean, it was unbelievable, and then Dallas, when we went there, it was fantastic. The people loved us, and it was so much fun going to games. New York Rangers played there too. I'm so fortunate where I got to play. played in LA, but played in the old Forum. We weren't that great a team, but those other cities, when I was there, there was so much excitement and a lot of pressure, and it was fun. I loved the pressure. I mean, there was times when it sucked, but I'd rather be in the fishbowl than not. And so,
yeah, Mets always brought up an interesting thing about who's in and who's out on your team. You know, yeah. who do you want to get on the ice with on a line? And he said he could figure that out at the beginning of a year when there would be a game would be on the line, whether it was exhibition or not, a regular season game. And he was the sort of guy that if it's 3-3 and, you know, this is a do or die game, he would have one leg over the boards, you know, looking at the coach going, put me on.
Yeah.
But there's all there, whether you like it or not, he said, and there's always going to be a guy or two who's got his head down saying to himself, please don't pick me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's always those guys, you know, but
yeah.
Yeah, Mess. I got to play with him in New York. It was great. He's just had this amazing confidence about himself, and he just oozed.
And scary.
Yeah, fuck, it was scary. It was so great. And some of his speeches were awesome. And anyways, he was quite the guy. He's just great, to play with.
If you had the money, Russ, if you had endless amounts of cash, would you buy an NHL team?
100%. I'd love to.
Oh, would you?
Oh, yeah.
How's that cigar, too? It sounds great.
Yeah, it's really good. Monte Cristo.
It's nice.
Cool. Yeah. My buddy Mike Vlastovich from Minneapolis sent me this. It's a beautiful cigar. I would. We
like if you had a loose billion around or whatever.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Jeff Mallett's a good friend of ours from Victoria, and he owns part of the San Francisco Giants, part of the Whitecaps. He's a year older than us, and born and raised in Victoria, and soccer player, great athlete, hockey player, and then went on to make a fortune with Yahoo, and made a lot of money. And he bought into the Giants and then bought into the Whitecaps, and he owns a soccer team in Europe. And we took a couple runs at teams with him. He tried to get in and we were trying to help him, but just didn't happen.
I'm laughing at the dog.
I know. I'm outside. So I'm in my backyard, and
Who let the dogs out?
I'm at Sherwood. I'm in my backyard. Obviously I can't smoke in the house. So I'm outside, right, and it's dead quiet until the frickin' neighbor let their dog out.
It's unbelievably quiet. I didn't know you're outside. Okay, Russ. Did someone get rid of that dog?
Yeah.
Is the dog gone?
I think the dog's gone.
The dog's
sorry like, about that. You know, I sit outside here in my backyard. I got this covered patio. It's awesome. I'm on the 13th hole at Sherwood, and it's quiet right now because there's a couple golfers out there. But anyways, the neighbor let the dog up. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Did I tell you how hot it was here today?
Yeah. Good one. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. You can do that. We were talking about Mess, I think, and all. Oh, would you buy a hockey team? Would you buy
I was telling the story about my friend Jeff Mallett, and he had some interest for a while there before the teams were, I mean, they were still really expensive, but when they were in the $200 million range, now they're in the $1 billion range. But
crazy, huh?
But we tried a couple teams. I called Toronto Maple Leafs, and I got the Ontario Teachers Fund. I don't know who I talked to.
Yeah, that's a good fund. Yeah. That's a big one.
But I talked to them about selling, and they said they wouldn't sell. And then they turned out, you know, they turned around and they sold it a couple years later. But my buddy was interested in the hockey, and his buddy was interested in the basketball. So we thought we had a good combo there, but it didn't happen. And then before the Aquilinis bought the Canucks, we were talking to McCaw about putting together. I mean, it wasn't us. You know, we were just trying to help these guys. They had all the money, and we were just trying to help them. But now it's the the billionaire, you know, multi-billionaire that can afford the any pro team and or a corporation. So he's
not too many private guys anymore.
No, it's big time. I remember, you know, when Bell and Rogers bought Toronto for what, $2 billion, and everybody thought that was crazy. And then the Clippers sold for $2 billion. So they got a deal at $2 billion, buying both all the teams and the building. And so, you know, these franchises are just worth, well, billions.
I can't imagine getting a phone call from you because the money's so big going, listen, this is Russ Courtney. I just want to see, I got a buddy with a few billion. If you guys are interested in maybe getting rid of dropping that team, and he'll pick it up. Yeah, he's got a billion. He's good to go.
Well, it was funny because Jeff met with John McCaw, and they were, I think they were 20 million apart on a deal. Like they were, And then the Aquilini's paid over 200 for it. So those are the days when, you know, 100 millionaires could buy a sports franchise.
Sure. Before we go, Rusty, I love John Tortorella.
You do, eh?
I do. Yep. I do love that guy, particularly in the press, because the season's so freaking long. And you and I both agreed when we did this show that we said to our partner, you know, we're not breaking hockey games down.
Yeah.
Right. We're not. First of all, Jerome's too stupid. Okay. He's, you know, I've got the record for being around the most hockey things in the world and not knowing very much about the game. So Tortorella, I love. And he's, as I call him, he's so clippable. If you jump onto YouTube, you know what he says. And another question we have, here's the lead up to it. Thinking about the movie Moneyball, which you would have seen, Brad Pitt goes into the locker room during an Oakland A's losing streak and players are listening to music and dancing.
Yeah.
He takes a bat and smashes the Ghetto Blaster. I remember this scene, and says, that's what losing sounds like.
Yeah.
Right there, you know? And the players, of course, look on horrified, staring at his crazed face. Russ, have you ever been part of a coach blow up like that, where the coach went crazy?
John Brophy. He, I told the story before, but I'll tell it again. He, we had no, at Old Maple Leaf Gardens. So we had this small locker room and we played like shit. And he came in, it came in after the first period, and he used to just go nuts, and he'd break sticks. He'd grab your stick and he'd break it, and he would punch the Gatorade bucket. He'd just tear the room apart, yelling and screaming at us. So guys, as soon as he walked in the room after we played a bad period, which was quite often when he was coaching us, you'd hide your stick, right? Cause he would go and grab sticks and break them. So he comes in and he turns the lights off. You can't see the guy beside you. It's completely black. Right. There's not a light on in the room. Nothing. So you can't see the guy beside you. And he starts screaming, if you're going to fucking sleep out there, you can fucking sleep in here, for Christ's sakes.
He had a voice like Mickey Mouse, which made it even harder to keep
and then face. He slammed the door, but no one knew if he was in the room or left the room. So finally somebody like Boris Salming says to Kenny Reagan, turn the fucking lights on. So he hits the lights. Finally the lights come on, and there's like half the guys they've got their heads covered because they don't have their helmets on. Thinking Brophy is still in there, gonna start throwing shit.
That is so funny.
I
can't imagine what Tortorella's like publicly. Doing press conference, you know, and doing scrums and all that, media scrums. I can't imagine what the guy must be like in the dressing room.
He calls guys out, right? I think some guys respect the fact that when you're not playing well, he'll tell you you're not. Where sometimes coaches they'll wait to the boiling point, right? Where they sit you out, or you know, they don't really give you a warning, even though you know you're not playing well. But he calls you out. I think he calls everybody out. I mean, I never played for him, but what I see and what I've read is that he is. Some players say, "Well, I like it because you know when you're not playing well, he tells you." Versus the coach that you know 2 games later sits you out, and then you figure out the coach is pissed off rather than hearing about it right up front.
I get a feeling, Russ, that I love those stories, you know, of those over the years of coaches ripping guys and screaming and yelling at them. And that's sort of normal, you know, politically incorrect for sure or whatever, but it was sort of normal back in the day, Russ. And I get a feeling now that shit doesn't happen much anymore in the dressing room. Am I right there? Or is that day gone by?
Yeah.
Because
player,
of money?
No, it's not money. It's just the player today. They just said you can't rip a lot of guys like they used to. I don't know. There's a word for it. Isn't it called millennials?
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Say that five times fast.
Yeah,
yeah,
I know.
Millennials. Yeah, well, they're like almost like a little more entitled, Russ. Is that?
Yeah, I just a little temperamental, maybe. I don't know. They just like I was talking to a couple players this summer, and they said they don't even tease each other anymore. Like they love hearing the stories about what we used to do to guys and playing tricks. Right. And they said you really can't do that to a lot of players because they just can't handle it. They don't like it.
And I wonder why, man. I wonder why.
I don't know. It's just,
I mean, the hazing thing stopped, right? So maybe it's an extension of that, right?
And I don't know.
Get over it, boys. Yeah, take a rip once
in
a while.
I'm 54, so I don't, you know, I can't relate to, I've got young kids and stuff I just can't handle it like we used to, you know, but. They're good kids. They're just different than we are, and that's just the way it is.
They're rich.
Well, I don't think it has. I don't think it has anything to do with money.
Yeah,
I really don't. I don't think it has anything to do with money. I just think they've got. I think the player has a lot more power today than they had when we played. You know, they get days off when they want to get days off. You can't do this. You can't do that. I mean,
or Russ are. When you talk about Brophy back in the day, or is it that the coaches aren't like that anymore?
Well, they aren't because they can't be. You know, you still at the end of the day, the coach has to get those players to perform. And so if they all go, you know what, this guy's a jerk and we're not going to play, that guy gets fired because it's easier to get rid of a coach than it is trade 20 players. So the coach has to, you know, obviously he's got to be the leader, but the 20 guys in front of him have more power than he does.
Right. Rusty, before we go, we've put another hour in the books here with dogs barking.
Yeah.
Cans of, what's it called? White Cloud or whatever it is you're drinking.
Canadian company.
They're running out. You can't buy that anywhere, I hear. And a little Cohiba.
If you were drinking, they'd really run out.
Wouldn't have a chance. Well, I used to leave the house and my old man I'd say, see you later, Dad, when I was like 20, still living at home. And he'd watch me walk out the door and as a joke, pick up his phone and say, stockbroker, give me 20 million shares of Molson. my son's on his way out the door.
Yeah.
There was an NFL game today in London, in London, England. We've seen this week teams or someone played their home opener, I don't know, over in Europe. We see that all the time. You know, European players, of course, are a huge part of the NHL. Our last question, do you ever see an NHL Europe with a playoff system that ends up with the top European team playing the top North American team for the Stanley Cup? Do you ever see that one day?
I don't know.
We talked about this a little bit.
Yeah,
a couple weeks
ago. I think the NHL season's so long. How could you prolong it with like another playoff? Maybe I don't know.
Or in the playoffs, or maybe a team would make the playoffs.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, man. That's the NHL season is so long. I can't see them adding more games. But I don't know how you do that. I mean, Europe.
Well, say LA gets in there and the team from Europe, how do you do home and away games?
Yeah,
it's
no
a
kidding. 14
hour flight.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You
could do. How about anyway. Some of the guys that play in that, in the Russian league, you know, they've got like 14 hour flight.
On a bus?
No, not on a bus, on a freaking plane. Oh my God.
Yeah. You signed up for it. Yeah. How do you like it, pal?
Yeah. You're almost there.
I'd be fucking autistic by the time I got there sitting on a plane.
Who says you're not?
Russ, we're out of time. You can think, I don't know if you have any final thoughts. So I have, Russ, I read, my buddy was telling me a funny thing with his wife the other day. And he said, honey, what attracted you to me? You know, so what quality attracted you to me so much? Right. And his wife said, well, that you're absolutely one of the funniest guys I've ever met. And he says, you mean it wasn't because I'm really good in bed? And she said, see, you're fucking hilarious. anyway, Russ,
I gotta give a shout out to Neil Edwards. Sure. He's an Aussie, a great agronomist. He used to work for Discovery Land Co. And he's our agronomist here at Sherwood Country Club. And you're going to see during the Champions Tour over the end of the month, or November, first few days of November, the Champions Tour here at Sherwood. You'll see it on TV, and what a great job he does. But he loves our show. So when he's out mowing and seeing what's going on the golf course in the early mornings, he listens to our podcast. So I love that we've got a guy who never grew up watching hockey and does a great job here at Sherwood Country Club. He's a good friend of ours and Gretz. And so he's always texting me about our show. So
I saw that. What's his name again? What's his full name?
Neil Edwards.
Yeah, listen, I have something to say to Neil, okay, before we go. Okay. Listen, Neil, every time I go there to play golf, and I've been there a bunch over my life, okay, can you raise the fucking blades a little bit on the greens cutter, okay? Okay, can you just raise them a fucking half a millimeter, okay?
Neil, don't.
The first hole I went to, I play up in Canada, the first hole I went to, I had a little 8-footer downhill. I putted it back to the fucking tee, okay? This guy's a bit of a prick, Russ. I'll tell you what, he's a bit of a prick with the blades, okay, pal? You and your, take it off. Take a little less off.
Yeah.
Okay. Then more. Anyway, Rusty, another great show. Listen, if you like the show, we'd like you to tune in. We want to get into the top Apple podcasts. Okay. We need a little more work. Please share it or tell 3 or 4 friends. That's what it's all about. And we love everyone listening. It's fantastic. And my email is junglejerome@yahoo.com. Because everyone wants a bunch of these shirts, Russ. So this thing will be out of control. I can see. And I've got to push buttons to do orders.
Oh, geez.
I got a feeling I'm going to end up paying $5,000 for shirts and everyone gets 2 of them free. Yeah, the way it's going.
Or anyway, they're going to send them back because you sent the wrong size.
Exactly. This will be a hell of a deal. Rusty, get back to that dog. Get back to the cigar. Have a White Claw on us, okay? We'll talk to you next week, everybody. You've been listening to The Suspendables. See you next time.